We're reading the article, The Difference Between Mercy and Truth and Untrue Mercy. It's article number 8 by the Rabash. Questions can be asked on kab.tv, and some questions related to the lesson will be asked here during the lesson. Again, the difference between mercy and truth and untrue mercy. It is written, Yaakov called his son Yosef and deal with me chesed, mercy and truth. The interpreters ask, why did he call specifically Joseph and said to him, deal with me mercy and truth? Rashi interpreted that mercy and truth, mercy that one does with the dead is true mercy, for he does not expect a reward in return. Rashi interprets the verse, I give you one portion more than your brothers, since you trouble yourself with my burial. Rashi's words contradict what is written here. He explains, giving you one portion more than your brothers, that is, because he troubles himself with my burial. Thus, this is not true mercy, since he is paying for him for his effort by giving him one portion more than his brothers. Concerning true mercy, Rashi interprets that he does not give him anything for his effort to bring him to the land of Israel, as he says, for the mercy that one does with the dead is that he does not expect reward in return.
Even more than that, even though he sees the truth that he is not walking on the right path and he needs to change his way, that is, to get out of self-love, however, the shell of Egypt controls the body and a person cannot emerge out of this control, but only with help from above. As our sages said, man's inclination overcomes him each day, and were it not for the Creator's help, he would not be able to overcome it. Therefore, the work begins primarily in the second state called Lolishma.
It therefore follows that the work with the body, when it resists and does not let one work, is primarily when one is working in concealment and does not expect any reward from people, but rather he works only for the Creator, because He has commanded us to observe Torah and mitzvot and commandments. He wants to do His will, and this is His reason for observing the Torah and commandments. The only thing He lacks is that He expects a reward for this. He sees that He cannot work not in order to receive reward, but only if He promises to His body that it will receive some reward for its labor. To the extent that the body believes this, that it will receive reward, to that extent he can observe the Torah commandments. But when he doubts the reward, he has no fuel for work. In such a state, when a person yearns to be a servant of the Creator's in order not to receive reward, the body protests with all its might and does not give him rest when he says to it, I want to observe Torah and commandments without any reward. I want to observe the commandment of faith, meaning to believe in the greatness of the Creator, although the body does not feel the greatness and importance of the Creator, that it is worthwhile to obey Him and observe His commandments in every detail. By this I am serving Him, and I imagine that if the greatest in the generation were here to serve, and he would not let just anyone serve him, but has chosen a handful of people, and I am among them, how happy would I be then? So why here, with the service of the Creator, I cannot work without any reward, and I expect to be given something in return for the service? This is so, because there I see a person whom everyone respects, and they tell me how great he is, I can therefore grasp the greatness that they say about him. In that case, I serve him because of his importance. But with the Creator, we need to believe in his greatness and importance, and especially to believe that he is good and benevolent, since the body does not want to believe, but to see with its own eyes that it is so. For this reason, sometimes one overcomes and has partial faith, meaning to give him small portions. However, he does not have the strength to believe in whole faith. As it is written in the introduction to the study of the Ten Sefirot. Now, we can understand why a person cannot advance in the work of bestowal, meaning where he does not see a reward for his work, he has no fuel, and the body slackens in its work. We should say that this is only for lack of faith. When a person knows this, meaning when he knows the reason which causes him to weaken it so he does not have the strength to work, there is hope that he will be able to correct himself in such a way as to be healthy and strong and be able to go to work. But when he does not know the real reason for his weakness, he could listen to several people advising him on how to become better. However, nothing will help him, because each one tells him what they understand according to their views with respect to healing him. And temporarily, he receives some medicine from them, or cure, and begins to think that they understand something, or he would not heed their advice. Moreover, it is easier to believe that they know what they are saying, because they themselves think that they are great experts, and the medicines they prescribe do not risk his life, his self-love. For this reason, anyone who feels some weakness in the work goes to them. They give them medicines which are pacifiers, relaxants. That is, when one feels some pain in the work of the Creator, when he sees that he's far from the truth and does not want to deceive himself, for this reason he goes to seek some cure, to heal his weakness in the work. When he takes the medicines they give, it is real remedy for the time being. That is, the pains he had have gone away thanks to their cure. And now, he is not in pain for not walking on the path of truth. Meaning that through the medicine that he received from them, he no longer has a demand for the truth.
That is, a person who is on the way to enter the upper world, he goes through a very strict stage. We can call it the 7 years of hunger or the burdening of the heart. It has all kinds of names. And then he sees that he is in the wilderness and he's incapable of coming out of it, and he will not be able to come out of it. This is the truth, because this is his only nature. And therefore, here it's a dangerous place where if he is given some solution, seemingly, that so that you can stay in your will to receive, you don't have to fight it, you don't have to feel that you're trying, but you cannot, and nothing will come out of it, that you're in some suffering, and that you have no hope, as the will to receive depicts to a person. And it's true that he has no hope in the will to receive, and he hasn't yet received a will to bestow. So then the person runs away to religion, he runs away to all kinds of other methods. The most important is not to feel that his nature is a nature which is the opposite of him, that he's not facing Pharaoh. That's the most important. So he runs away, runs back from Egypt. And this is what we see. As it says, 1,000 enter a room and one comes out to the teaching. This is how this filter, this sieve works of Egypt. And only the mighty ones, as he writes there, whose patience or endurance served them, they reached the peak of the mountain. And therefore, we should also see this time that we're in. It is a long time, a bitter time called exile. And it demands connection and persistence and mutual support. Otherwise, a person does not hold on. And the nearest opening or way out is something closer to religion. Not to go above reason, but within reason. And to continue this way. So, we therefore have to build, as he says, we need to build an environment and such an atmosphere of support, mutuality, our root, so that each will help his friend. And this is how we build the kli for the future redemption.
Continuing, it follows that. It follows that the medicines that he received from them are relaxants, meaning so as to not feel the pain, pain relief. This is similar to a person with a headache who takes painkillers. The pills do not cure him. They only calm his pain. It is likewise with our matter. All the counsels he receives from the advisors that belong to the general public cannot be counsels to perform acts of bestowal. They are merely painkillers, but do not heal the actual illness, which is the main reason for his weakness. But when he has learned the cause of the illness, meaning that the reason is only that he lacks faith to believe in the greatness and importance of the Creator, the Zohar calls this Shechina, or divinity, in the dust. And our work is to raise the Shechina from the dust. This gives us a different order in the work of the Creator.
This means that one is dissatisfied, he's feeling bitterness. Each and every day he discovers that he is in order to receive. He becomes weaker against his ego that is putting him into all kinds of thoughts and desires and actions that are not kosher and further away from spirituality. And it seems to him that he's going backwards. And here, instead, they tell him, you did this? Okay, great, you're righteous. You did that? You're also righteous. You did that also. So in each and every action, you profit. And you seemingly are corrected already. So, of course, it's quite different. The way of the Torah is the opposite of the way of the landlords. And this is why a person simply goes for it. And you can blame him with anything. He did not succeed. And this is what he writes in the letter, that one who learned and was with my father, Baal Sulam, I find him even more suspect, because one who spent a long time in the wisdom of Kabbalah and advanced and advanced and advanced, however, did not yet cross the barrier, he has great bitterness, and he can become the enemy, the hater, who is against the Kabbalists, the greatest one. From there come those who seemingly, on the one hand, understand what it says, on the other hand, they do not attain what it says. And they are the ones who are, how shall I put it, the most dangerous. Yes, do you have anything about it? Yes?
Continuing where we left off. This means that one should know that there are actions and intentions, and we were given the observance of Torah and commandments in word and in action. However, all of them, both Torah and commandments, have an intention too, meaning to aim what I want in return for observing the Torah and commandments, meaning what I must intend while observing the Torah and commandments. Primarily, he should know for whose sake he must observe them. That is, it cannot be said of people in the general public that they should have intentions because they will come from lo lishma to lishma, and the actions alone will suffice. For this reason, they cannot be obligated to keep the intentions. Rather, as they observe the Torah and commandments in practice, in action, which applies to the commandments dependent on words or actions, the intention is not important then, for even if they have no intention, but rather they aim that now they are observing what the Creator has commanded them to do, this is enough for them, for lo lishma, not for her sake. But when a person wants to achieve lishma, for her sake, meaning that he wants to observe the Torah and commandments not in order to be rewarded, but rather he wants to bring contentment to the Creator, to achieve this, there is the matter of intention. This, meaning this commandment I am observing, with what intention am I doing it?
I remember I used to still live in Rehovot, and I had a question, what is Lishma? It says that you must reach Torah Lishma. Where does it say so? Where there is a book where it says Torah Lishma? I thought it was some article or some book or something. And I was told, no, this depends. If you're studying in a kollel, then you're studying Lishma, in a special kind of yeshiva. I was thinking, so then I should just throw everything away and go study there, because it says you need to reach Torah Lishma. So the meaning of Lishma is completely not clear to anyone, even to those who study Kabbalah. Until they're rewarded with interpreting correctly what Lishma is, what it is truly to bestow, above the will to receive, above any calculation for oneself, everything is in there is none else besides him. This means to an exodus or exit to spirituality, otherwise you cannot keep it. So this is a big problem that the public do not know, do not understand, or they are being taught that Lishma, well, what you're doing right now is Lishma. Everything that you keep, as it says in Shulchan Aruch, the table, it's Lishma. Yes.
It is known that it is impossible to work without reward. Thus, how can it be said to a person that it is worthwhile to work not in order to receive a reward? After all, he needs a reward. There is only one thing that can be said to him, that he will be rewarded with serving the king, and there is no greater pleasure than serving the king. Then, according to the importance of the king, so he will enjoy. The measurement of the pleasure from serving the king depends on the importance of the king, to the extent to which he appreciates him. But since the Shekhinah is in exile and in the dust, it is said in the Zohar that one should aim to raise Shekhinah from the dust. Dust means lowliness, which a person tramples with his feet, with his heels, rather. This means that in everything a person does in observing Torah and commandments, he should intend that by this he will be rewarded with raising the Shekhinah from the dust. It means that he wants reward for his labor in Torah and commandments, to feel that he is serving a great king. Meaning that during the labor, he feels that for spirituality, when he wants to work in order to bestow, at that time, he tastes the taste of dust in his work. This is so because there is a great concealment on spirituality, such that we neither see nor feel the importance of the matter. From this, all the obstacles come to him. But if the Creator were to remove the concealment from him, and he would feel the importance of the king, this would be his entire reward, which he wishes for himself in life. That is so because he wants to serve the king, as it is written, as we say in the prayer, and came to Zion, blessed is he, our God, who has created us for his glory. A person wants to be able to thank the Creator for creating him for his glory, meaning to serve the Creator. This means that a person will agree with all his organs and that his mouth and heart will be the same, in that he gives thanks to the Creator for creating man in his glory and for not creating man for man's own benefit, but that his will and yearning will be only to bestow contentment upon the Creator.
But and a person should have his intention in everything he does. Thanks to this deed that he is doing, the Creator will give him the intention that all of his actions will be only in order to bestow, and that he will cancel his desire for self-love, since he sees that he cannot exit its control, and he is in exile among the nations of the world in his body. It is known that the Zohar says that every person is a small world. It was also said that there are 17 nations in the world, as well as the people of Israel. Also, within person, there are 17 nations, as well as Israel. And the Israel in him is in exile under the rule of the 17 nations within him. This is as our sages said, he who comes to purify is aided. We should interpret the word comes. We can say that comes is the act that he is doing. He wants to do it lishma, but he cannot, because he is in exile under the rule of the nations of the world. He is aided from above means that the Creator redeems him from the exile among the nations who governed him. It turns out that when a person performs an act, and he wants the act to be lishma, and not because of self-love, meaning to receive some reward for the act, namely a reward in this world or in the next world, primarily, he wants something for his action. However, he wants the Creator to give him complete satisfaction from the act he does and to feel that he is the happiest person in the world now, in that he is serving the King. But if he receives anything else besides the service that he does, that will blemish the service for the King.
Meaning just a sign. He demands a sign that he's serving correctly.
The evidence of this is that he wants something more. But what can he demand is why he has no inspiration and a true sensation when he is speaking to the king. For example, he is asking the king that when he blesses for pleasures and says, "Blessed are you, O Lord, who brings bread out of the earth," why does he not have the manners to be standing with fear and trepidation as one who stands before the king? Rather, he speaks to the Creator and has no emotion, no feeling with whom he is speaking. This pains him, But since he is incapable of correcting himself, he asks the Creator to help him and give him some revelation so that he will feel before whom he stands, before the King of Kings. So why does he not feel it? It was said about it in the Zohar, he who comes to purify is aided. It asks, with what? And it replies, with a holy soul. That is, he is given abundance from above, called neshama, soul, which helps him have the ability to come out of the governance of self-love and enter kedusha, holiness, meaning that all of his thoughts will be only how to bestow contentment upon the Creator.
Meaning, not to ask for anything is impossible. Why? Because then he can't tell if he's doing something or not. He needs to know if he's acting correctly. So the minimal demand is simply to know whether or not I'm acting correctly, without anything in addition. Afterwards, from that demand to know if he's acting correctly, he begins to receive the understanding that to bestow contentment, he can only do by enjoying bestowing contentment, by his own measure of enjoyment. So thus he has to begin to engage in bestowal, to bestow in order to bestow and to receive in order to bestow. But this is a result, an outcome of demanding to know how to act correctly, meaning always restriction, timtum, masach, reflected light, meaning that he has only one demand, that demand to know if he's acting correctly is before everything else.
Continuing to read, through the soul he obtains, the concealment and restriction are removed, and he feels the greatness of the Creator. At that time, the body surrenders to the light of the Creator as a candle before a torch, and he feels that he has come out from enslavement to freedom. That is, while he wanted to work only for the Creator, the questions of the nations of the world in his body promptly came and asked, how can you give up the existence of the body and have no thought at all in its favor, and instead devote all the efforts and the senses only to be able to find ways to bring contentment to the Creator? Their questions are even worse, because a person does not think that these thoughts belong to the people of Israel, but that they are thoughts of the 70 nations. However, a person thinks that they are his thoughts. And that he is asking himself these questions. And how can a person fight against himself? Bala Sulam said that one should know that these thoughts and desires that are foreign to the Jewish people, they do not pertain to Israel itself, but rather come from thoughts of the general nations of the world, which enter the personal nations of the world that exist in every person. When one believes that this is so, that they are not his, then one can fight with another body. But when he thinks that these foreign thoughts are his own, a person cannot fight against himself. Thus, there is no other way but to ask the Creator to help one come out of this bitter exile, and it's only with his help. As was said in the Zohar, that the help that comes from above is that he is given a soul. Through the soul, which shows the revelation of his greatness, only then does the body surrender. By this, we can interpret what it says about the Exodus from Egypt in the Haggadah. And in all the gods of Egypt, I will do judgments. I am the Lord, I am he, and not a messenger. I am the Lord, it is I, and not another. This comes to say that only the Creator can help one out of one's enslavement in the exile of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, who is keeping him from exiting self-love and doing only works that benefit his self-love. And he has no way by which to do anything for the sake of the Creator. At that time comes the Creator's help. Indeed, Bala Sulam said, when can a person say that he has no counsel to do anything for the benefit of the Creator? This is specifically when on his side he already did anything that he could. That is, he has already tried every advice in the world, that whatever counsels he thought could help him, he tried them. Yet these counsels did not help him. Then he can say wholeheartedly, if the Creator does not help me, I am lost. As far as the works of the lower ones, in terms of what they can do, I have done everything and it did not help. It is like a person who had a sick person at home. What does he do? He goes to the doctor and he says that the doctor will be a good messenger of the Creator and the sick one will be well. But if that sick person has not yet healed, normally he goes to a professor. He says that he will certainly be a good messenger of the Creator and will heal the sick person. If the professor cannot help either, then they make a conference of professors. Perhaps together, by consulting, they will be able to find a remedy for the sick. But if that too does not help, then normally we say to the Creator, Dear Lord, if you do not help me, no one can help me. We have been to all the great doctors who are your messengers, and none could help me. And I have no one else to ask but you, that you will help me. Then, when that person is healed, he says that only the Creator himself helped him, but not through a messenger. This is what is written in the Passover Haggadah story, that the exodus from Egypt was done by the Creator himself and not by a messenger. It is as they said, in all the gods of Egypt, I will do judgments. I, the Lord, I am He and not a messenger. I, the Lord, and not another. In other words, when a person has done all the counsels and tactics which are as messengers, such as the above-mentioned doctors, but they did not help, then a person can pray from the bottom of the heart, because he has nowhere else to turn to for help, as he has already done all the counsels he could think of. This is the beginning of the matter of, and the children of Israel sighed from the work, and they cried out, and their cry rose up to God from the work. We explained what it means that their cries were from the work. From the work means that after they had done all that they could in the work that pertained to them, and saw that no help was coming from here after all the work, for this reason their cry was from the bottom of the heart. That is, they saw that no messenger could help them, but the Creator Himself. As it is written, I am He and not a messenger. This is when they were redeemed and came out of Egypt. By this we will understand what the Holy Ari said, that prior to the exodus from Israel, the exodus from Egypt, the people of Israel were in 49 gates of Tum'ah, impurity, and then the King of Kings appeared to them and redeemed them. The question is, why did he wait until that time when they were in utter lowliness? According to the above, we can understand that before they saw their true lowly state, that they have regressed and could not advance to the side of Kedusha, Then they understood that no messenger could help them, as with the allegory about the doctors. Then they cried out only to the Creator to help them. This is why it is written, I am He and not a messenger. The meaning of He Himself redeeming them and delivering them from the exile means that they attain that there are no messengers in the world. Rather, the Creator does everything. This is as it is written in the Zohar, He who comes to purify is aided. It says, with what is he aided? With a holy soul. That is, he receives the revelation of his godliness, called Neshama. By this, he attains his root, and then a person annuls as a candle before a torch, after he has obtained the Neshama. For then he feels that it is a part of God above.
Questions?
The minimal demand for that sign that one is working correctly, that's something new for me. What is allowed to demand? I thought that too is within reason.
It doesn't matter if it's within reason or above reason. I need to... What does it mean that I don't want to receive anything, to know anything, if I'm if I'm always in my ego and I want to do something above my ego, then I demand only this. What is above the ego? How can I do something which is against my nature? Well, this I need to be taught.
Many times there is this feeling that I really don't know if I'm doing the right things, externally or internally.
Yes. Well,
I don't know. I don't see that there are any answers for it. Many times such a demand erupts.
No answers. That's fine. No answers. But it's not that you shouldn't demand. You can. You want to do something. We're talking in a very real sense. Practically, we want to perform actions which are called bestowal, spiritual, not for oneself, to delight the emanator. I want to know what it means. Do you know how many teachings and methods there are who think they know how to do this? I don't want to make an error. So this is the method of the revelation of the Creator to the created being. A method that's revealed above the will to receive, above reason. All right, so I want to know what above reason means, how to do it, how to engage in it. I don't want to be passive, whatever comes, So what are we working for? What do we want? We want to perform the work of God, of the Creator. So what is it we need to demand? What is raising man? It has to be a demand. Otherwise you'll just sit, and that's it.
Maybe I'm not asking correctly, what is the work of God? Isn't that Pharaoh's question? What is this work that you do?
No. No, there's a difference. What is that? What is this work for you? Now, we want to get to some actions of bestowal, and the ego doesn't understand this and asserts that there is no benefit to it.
I'm just trying to... Let's say, in the middle of the day, as we say, inner work, to pray for the friends, so yes, I want to know if I'm doing it correctly or not, but...
And that's also correct, that's also a demand. Why not?
I was thinking that this demand, we have the allegory that you talked once about the one who is at the end of the kingdom, keeping some hut in the forest, and the king forgot about him, everyone forgot about him, and he keeps on doing the work. You remember that? There's this allegory that I simply do what I succeed in scrutinizing, but without demanding even to know if I'm doing it correctly. Just the main thing is to do.
The main thing is to do without knowing if I'm acting correctly? No, I don't think that's the real form the right way to relate to anything. How could it be? What, I was told to do something and I do it and that's it? That's how the general public thinks. You just tell me what to do and I'll do it. Without intentions, without anything. Intentions are on you.
No, with intentions.
Which intentions?
Well, you try to think about the connection to demand for the friends, to think about what am I doing it for.
Right, yes. You're demanding then.
Can.
Yes.
On the other hand, the true demand, how does a person determine that he has already done everything and then he says, not a messenger, etc.? Otherwise, what is he writing about? If the Creator will not help me, then I'm lost.
Yes.
How can a person say such a thing?
It comes to him from the efforts, from the work. It doesn't come to him out of nowhere that he just says that. He can't say anything like that. He doesn't mean it. He means to continue and continue and continue. And even if I die as I am, I'm not leaving this path. And then it comes by the order of degrees. According to the program of nature, the plan of nature, that's how it's revealed. But it's not that one says, right, from this moment on, I'm starting to demand something. No, it comes like all of the things we do. It comes on its own. What we study, well, we're learning what to do. And also, we hear of how these stages are disclosed. But they're disclosed on their own terms. It's not that we build them. Yes?
So, he talks here about a single person and he gives the example of the doctors and later on he moves to the whole nation and the people of Israel's side.
Yes?
So the work of an individual compared to the work of the whole nation, or let's say a ten. What is the work in the ten that then they all come to raise this demand?
It's difficult to understand what you're talking about. What is the actual work?
The work itself is to demand.
To demand what?
To pray for the
friends. What are you demanding?
The force of bestowal.
What is the force of bestowal? What is it? You're given 10 kilograms of the power of bestowal. What next? What do? You need to do something in order to discover that you don't have the power of bestowal, for example, let's say, and then you demand it. In your work, in your prayer, it comes out automatically. You begin to cry out, to demand, to request. So what work do you do in order to demand the power of bestowal? Connection. There's no other work. How do we enter Egypt? By not wanting to connect, deciding that there's no alternative, and starting to engage in connection.
Shamir.
Boker Tov, Rav. You said that many Kabbalists, they don't even understand what Torah Lishma is. Even after studying for many years.
Who? Kabbalists? No, there's no such thing that Kabbalists don't understand what Lishma is. A Kabbalist is someone who is in Lishma. One who studies the wisdom of Kabbalah, it takes him a few good years until he comes to in order to bestow, and then he understands what Lishma means.
I have a question that after reading this text, it feels that the Creator wants us to give out our prayer, to always come to a point where we can't do anything. And from even from going from low lishma to lishma, it is always only the prayer for the Creator. It feels that the Creator plays a very big role in this.
Supposedly. Do you have any other power that acts other than the Creator? No. What he does is simply to give the created being a point of, well, consciousness, awareness regarding what's happening and what he does. And from that point of consciousness, the created being needs to make an effort. But in truth, the Creator, in past, present, and future, I don't know what times and what degrees, everything is done by the Creator. In that respect, you can relax. But what's upon us to do is to discover His works. We don't affect or influence the work itself. We just want to discover Him more and more in order to glorify Him, to elevate Him.
Ken.
You said that a person on the entrance to the upper world goes through a state of the burdening of the heart, and he cannot come out of it, and then a person might run away to other methods.
Well, that's what we see with the people of Israel and the Egyptians and Pharaoh and the Creator, everything in Egypt, how it comes to this very, very tense situation.
Yes, we see that a person comes to a certain point where he enters a great burdening of the heart, and as much as he cries out, he discovers it all comes from the ego. There's like a wall there that he cannot go through.
Yes.
And then he receives some help. I understand that the help is actually greater adhesion with the environment, because by my own forces I cannot do it. And there's some force now that attaches me to the environment even more to the ten. This is actually the neshama that I get from above. This is the help, the neshama I get from above.
Through it.
What do you mean?
Through it, yes. The group is the vessel in which you begin to discover your inner spiritual forces called the soul.
And then it's considered to annul as a candle before a torch. It means that I actually, well, this ego that I was struggling and fighting, it goes away, and it's included in the environment. Then one can be a part of this bestowal.
Yes.
So the whole thing is to attach to the environment more and more.
Correct. You express it correctly. You have that ability. Yes, Satan.
Oh, he writes here that without reward you cannot work, and the reward is that there is no greater pleasure than serving the king. The problem of reaching the importance, that's also a lot of work. So what is your reward before you reach this importance?
Truth. You shall purchase and never sell. Yes. And to find that everything else is a lie. And you want to enjoy the lie? Go ahead. But you should know that you're going to enjoy a lie. Like drugs, for example.
He says, I am not a messenger. Why? First of all, a messenger is something not quite bad. If he's a messenger from the king, it's something great. So
that we are in contact with the Creator Himself, with the upper force Himself, without any mediators, let's say.
Look, first of all, why do I see a messenger? And what in the work in the ten makes the messenger be the Creator Himself?
I don't know. I'm not talking about that.
We saw that at the time that all the counsels and tactics the person has already did that, all the messengers like the doctors, they did not help. Then he moves on to...
So maybe that also relates to what Hanoch asked. messengers or emissaries means that I'm not yet confronting the Creator directly with my own demand. But there are such states where it's as if I'm not pinning my success, my rescue on him. Perhaps that's what he meant by the emissary. Meaning, I'm not requesting the Creator in his full glory, as we say.
Then he says, then it begins the thing of the people of Israel cried from the work, and their cry rose up from the work. So this thing that we are reaching right now in Passover, we need to relate these things, right? What is it that we have to reach?
It's preferable that we feel that, yes.
Okay, so in order to reach that trial that he's talking about here, we need to reach a certain maturity,
ripeness or readiness? What does it mean?
What is this maturity or ripeness for the work? Readiness.
So, in all ways, you feel that you're in a situation, well, you're lost. It's a lost cause, both corporeally, because you're still founded upon that, not spirituality. You're still on this side of the Mahzon. And also that you have absolutely no chance of coming out to spirituality. And you wasted away your entire life sitting here many, many years. And later on it'll be written on this chair, on your chair, here sat Tzvika. That will be everything that, all that remains of you. And simply egoistically, you're still an egoist. You're still here. On this side of the barrier. And you demand, you don't know what to do, you're helpless. And you see that externally also, we need to see how in the world there will be many external pressures on the people of Israel. Very great pressures. Not so much in terms of war and conflict, but ideologically, it will all enter, go into high gears now.
So how will I make it so that I will have this like a torch under my butt and I will start running in the direction of the exodus from Egypt? Because I don't see we're coming out of Egypt. We're going to reach next year and again enter the exile and again...
No, we need to make an effort now, and really a great effort, such that each one determines or depicts for himself that he is in the state of Egypt. He should clarify that state. He should scrutinize it. Why is it called Egypt?
What is the sign that will show us that we are beginning to come out of Egypt? What is the sign? Is there such a sign that...
Complete helplessness on all sides.
So first we have to despair, reach bottom, you know, and then we will feel that we're coming out of Egypt. Is this what you mean?
It's a state where it's better for me to die than live.
That bad?
No, even worse.
And then we will understand that we're beginning to come out of Egypt, out of despair. You're in despair. How can you feel that then?
Then the emanator is revealed and he helps. He rescues.
How do we accelerate that? We're tired of it. How do we come out of there?
Tired of it? No, you're just angry now.
So what do you suggest? Practically, we're spinning and spinning. What do you suggest?
To scrutinize everyone together. It has to be a decision, a resolution, well, a social one. A social kind of resolution for the entire society. From Egypt, we can only come out with a very clear recognition from within the vessel. No one can come out individually. So.
Scott meets von Carolina.
Scott from North Carolina is asking, what is the right calculation? What is the examination that our work is for the Creator and not for the body?
through the group. You need to accept the Creator, the group, instead of the Creator, and to work with it. There's no other solution. This is what's before you, and on one hand you can't tolerate them, barely, and if you have some good relations with them, these relations will be spoiled. Don't worry, you'll start hating them, and this will be a very clear indication of what's going on between you and the Creator. And the more you feel that you can't be with them together, you keep resisting, you don't want, you go around, you don't come, and you'll feel in that this exactly is how you relate to the Creator. It's really worthwhile. And it's equal also, and from that you'll understand where you are. If you can serve them, if you work for them, it's exactly like working for the Creator. We have these indications.
Sometimes we hear from people who are here and went to all kinds of other ways that they call, that they're similar. They say, your way is so difficult. Why don't you soften a bit? Why don't you like yourselves the way you are? Why are you always fighting the ego? Love yourself a bit. Accept it. There are many psychological methods that teach people, you know, it's like paracetamol pill, you know, and it's really seductive, tempting.
It's seductive, of course. Why did it develop across history? As soon as the wisdom of Kabbalah began, in parallel, all of these methods began developing. And when it came to ruin, then three religions started developing. Of course, that's obvious. It's a kind of mitigation. Of course, I perform all kinds of external actions instead of internal actions, and for that I receive as a reward the next world, and this world also. So, these have all kinds of things, all kinds of rewards waiting for them, and those have other rewards, and each one describes it so. Depicts it so. And that's the problem. The ego searches for, and of course this is deliberate. This comes from above. It's rooted in the general system, which is called reality. So, alongside the lane of the wisdom of Kabbalah, you have many other systems, which ultimately assist in clarifying how the ego relates to the power of the Creator in order to bestow. And so they all have their places. And it's forbidden to erase anything from reality, but only to continue in such a way where you scrutinize what pertains to you, and whatever happens with them will happen, and whatever happens with us will happen, and it's up to us only to scrutinize and clarify the Upper One's desire. And of course they don't think that way, because there everything is founded on the egoistic foundation. So each one wants to contradict everyone else, to elevate himself, with lies even, if needs be. The only important thing is to rise, to ascend, and that's an indication for where all these religions come from. Justice doesn't matter to me. What's important is that I'll be above everyone. It's the true form of the ego.
Earlier, when Eitan asked what is the reward for the time being, you told him the truth, to see that this is the truth, it means that you have a reward. This is what is leading you. So it's not clear to me how people who study, let's say, following the method of Rabash and Bala Sulam, how does it happen that suddenly the truth changes for them and they go somewhere else?
the ego conceals. I simply don't, well, I can't agree with the fact that the ego is greater, so now I can't agree with being hurt. What does it mean that I'm studying for 10 years and not receiving anything, and I even feel worse? And sometimes I feel myself so confused, as if I didn't study anything, didn't learn anything. And even more than that, did I tell you about how one morning someone came to the Rabash, the Rabash whispered to me quietly, I was sitting next to him, he whispered, this man didn't come here for 10 years. And we're continuing the lesson, and this person was, well, pretty old already. He was 50-something, and I was 35, maybe. Yes, and then we're continuing the lesson, we're studying, and he starts answering the questions one by one and starts asking such questions of the Rabash that Rabash had a difficulty answering. Not that he didn't know the answers, but it's difficult to format it correctly, and we see that happening. And, you know. And he went out again and never came again. I guess 10 years haven't passed, or in the meantime, but Rabash passed away already, so he never came back. And afterwards, the Rabash asked us, and it's truly like that. He asked, how did you feel? A person who hasn't been here for the last 10 years. So, I don't remember if he spoke of this just to me or to everyone. But, what did you feel? Did you feel something like, so what are we doing here? He studied by himself somewhere. Look at the depth of his understanding. He went through the entire study of the Ten Sfirot. He understands everything. He has good questions. He's completely coherent with it. And he also brings other source texts. And you, nothing. You're nothing. So what are we doing here? This is called the Torah, and that is called, well, knowledge, wisdom. You can bring people here, and they'll know what's written, without attainment or anything. Bring me those people who learn physics, mathematics, you know, these type of STEM subjects, and you'll see how they understand TAS, the study of the Ten Sfirot, without any attainment. Who needs attainment? And also, they'll make all kinds of things better than we do. All kinds of sketches, which are better. It's unrelated. And there are many such questions which the will to receive brings to the person, such that the person doesn't understand. What am I doing here? What benefit will be of this? Will I die just like that, without any benefit from my life, without any reward, without anything here or there? What? In moments of weakness, one is given to many influences. Yes.
I saw this, you know, how many times? I think thousands of times in my life. And there's nothing that you can do about it. People drop off and they drop off and they drop off from the organization more and more. Until, well, those who leave, they leave. Yes?
So how can a person promise, guarantee tomorrow, or perhaps he can't?
Patience, first of all. And to be certain to burn everything that he has behind him, truly. one doesn't have any successful business that he can run away to, and one has nothing. He only has his work, maybe something with which he can cover his needs, and that's it. And there's nothing other than that, as much as possible. Even if one has to put himself into some risk, so long as it will keep him from living. That's it. Make, you know, enemies in all the different places so that you won't be able to run there. And that also keeps you.
Well, because it turns out that even to say, to follow the truth, well, you can lie to yourself about that always. I can always tell myself I'm following the truth.
Well, you're constantly studying and you're constantly checking.
It's just unclear to me how within this process it happens that people who invest themselves so completely according to some method suddenly find themselves in another method.
Because they fall under their ego, that there's no choice, so it seems to them. Rather, here in this way, I will see myself as actually doing something with a realistic reward, etc.
So, what holds you here? You detach from the reward, or
only the Creator can hold you. You only pin everything on Him. There is nothing else. I simply have nothing in the world. Everything disappears, and it's as though I'm being buried right now in the cemetery. There's nothing. Only Him.
Yes, the fact that tomorrow is up to Him entirely, that's obvious. He can, in a moment, disconnect you and... So a person doesn't have anything to do, only the Creator.
No, you do have what to do, to live this way, to live this way.
But how do you live this way, where it's only the Creator determining everything, and you don't...
I hear that there is none else besides Him. This is how it is anyway, but you need to recognize it, you need to relate yourself to it, you need to determine it.
I agree. The problem is that all of your inclinations... All of your tendencies want to hold on to something else, not to Him.
Yes, that's the war. That's the war. This is why it's called the war of the Lord.
So how do you win?
It says the Creator is always pushing you to Pharaoh, and He says, let's come together, and you will see how much I will rise through Pharaoh in your eyes. When you are like Moses, in your eyes, I will elevate. There is no other choice. There's no other way. But, again, each will help his friend, arvut, all kinds of actions. Those who listen a little bit, and also luck. If you're asking, then that's how it is. Luck. We need to also... How should I put it? We need to pay attention that there is something from above, call it fate, that we need to pin on it also ourselves. It's always a higher degree that is taking care of me. Taking care of me. Your star. Okay, where is our Tess? Rachamim. Give us some nice ending.
Rav, how can one come to the decision that the Creator will decide, that I'll decide, that the reward is to be human? That is contentment to the Creator. And then the spirit of the Creator who created us for His glory, in the honor of the quality of bestowal with which I bestow to the whole of reality, and then in equivalence of form, I am He and He is I. How do we get to that?
Amen.
Amen.
Do you think we remember even what you started with?
נעבור לחלק הבא של השיעור.